Chapter 48. He has evidently come up to Jerusalem to see the festival like the rest of us. And on that account is probably living not so very far away. He had the same hankering for the university that you had, in a milder form. I don't think he saw me, though he must have heard you speaking to the crowd. But he seemed not to notice. Well, suppose he did. Your mind is free from worries about him now, my Sue?
Yes, I suppose so. But I am weak. Although I know it is all right with our plans, I felt a curious dread of him, an awe, or terror, of conventions I don't believe in. It comes over me at times like a sort of creeping paralysis, and makes me so sad.
You are getting tired, Sue.
Oh, I forgot, darling.
Yes, we'll go on at once. They started in quest of the lodging, and at last found something that seemed to promise well, in Mildew Lane, a spot which to Jude was irresistible, though to Sue it was not so fascinating, a narrow lane close to the back of a college, but having no communication with it. The little houses were darkened to gloom by the high collegiate buildings, within which life was so far removed from that of the people in the lane, as if it had been on opposite sides of the globe. Yet only a thickness of wall divided them. Two or three of the houses had notices of rooms to let, and the newcomers knocked at the door of one, which a woman opened.
"I'll listen," said Jude suddenly, instead of addressing her.
"What?
Why, the bells, what church can that be? The tones are familiar." Another peal of bells had begun to sound out at some distance off.
"I don't know," said the landlady tartly.
"Did you knock to ask that?"
"No, for lodgings," said Jude, coming to himself. The householder scrutinized Sue's figure a moment.
"He haven't any to let," said she, shutting the door.
Jude looked discomfited, and the boy distressed.
"Ow, Jude," said Sue, "let me try. You don't know the way."
They found a second place hard by, but here the occupier, observing not only Sue, but the boy and the small children, said civilly, "I am sorry to say we don't let where there are children," and also closed the door. The small child squared its mouth and cried silently, with an instinct that trouble loomed. The boy sighed.
"I don't like Christminster," he said.
"Read the great old houses, gals?"
"No, colleges," said Jude, "which perhaps you will study in some day."
"I'd rather not," the boy rejoined.
"Now we'll try again," said Sue.
"I'll pull my cloak more around me. Leaving Kennetbridge for this place is like coming from Caiaphas to Pilate. How do I look now, dear?"
"Nobody would notice it now," said Jude.
There was one other house, and they tried a third time. The woman here was more amiable, but as he had little room to spare, and could only agree to take in Sue and the children if her husband could go elsewhere. This arrangement they perforce adopted, in the stress from delaying their search till so late. They came to terms with her, though her price was rather high for their pockets. But they could not afford to be critical till Jude had time to get a more permanent abode. And in this house Sue took possession of a back room on the second floor with an inner closet room for the children. Jude stayed and had a cup of tea, and was pleased to find that the window commanded the back of another of the colleges. Kissing all four, he went to get a few necessaries and look for lodgings for himself. When he was gone, the landlady came up to talk a little with Sue, and gather something of the circumstances of the family as he had taken in. Sue had not the art of prevarication, and, after admitting several facts as to their late difficulties and wanderings, she was startled by the landlady saying suddenly,
"Are you really a married woman?"
Sue hesitated, and then impulsively told the woman that her husband and herself had each been unhappy in their first marriages, after which, terrified at the thought of a second irrevocable union, unless the conditions of the contract should kill their love, yet wishing to be together, they had literally not found the courage to repeat it, though they had attempted it two or three times. Therefore, though in her own sense of the words she was a married woman, in the landlady's sense she was not.
The housewife looked embarrassed and went downstairs. Sue sat by the window in a reverie, watching the rain. Her quiet was broken by the noise of someone entering the house, and then the voices of a man and woman in conversation in the passage below. The landlady's husband had arrived, and she was explaining to him the incoming of the lodgers during his absence. His voice rose in sudden anger. Ah, who wants such a woman here? And perhaps a confinement. Besides, didn't I say I wouldn't have children? The hall and stairs fresh painted, to be kicked about by them. You must have known all was not straight with them coming like that. Taking in a family, when I said a single man. The wife expostulated, but, as it seemed, the husband insisted on his point, for presently a tap came to Sue's door, and the woman appeared. I am sorry to tell you, ma'am, she said, that I can't let you have the room for the week after all. My husband objects, and therefore I must ask you to go. I don't mind your staying over tonight, as it is getting late in the afternoon, but I shall be glad if you can leave early in the morning. Though she knew that she was entitled to the lodging for a week, Sue did not wish to create a disturbance between the wife and husband, and she said she would leave as requested. When the landlady had gone, Sue looked out of the window again. Finding that the rain had ceased, she proposed to the boy that, after putting the little ones to bed, they should go out and search about for another place, and bespeak it for the morrow, so as not to be so hard driven then as they had been that day. Therefore, instead of unpacking her boxes, which had just been sent on from the station by Jude, they sallied out into the damp, though not unpleasant, streets, Sue resolving not to disturb her husband with the news of her notice to quit, while he was perhaps worried in obtaining a lodging for himself. In the company of the boy she wandered into this street and into that, but though she tried a dozen different houses she fared far worse alone than as he had fared in Jude's company, and could get nobody to promise her a room for the following day. Every householder looked askance at such a woman and child inquiring for accommodation in the gloom. I ought not to be born, ought I? Said the boy with misgiving. Thoroughly tired at last, Sue returned to the place, where she was not welcome, but where at least as he had temporary shelter. In her absence Jude had left his address, but knowing how weak he still was she adhered to her determination, not to disturb him till the next day. 2. Sue sat looking at the bare floor of the room, the house being little more than an old intramural cottage, and then she regarded the scene outside the uncurtained window. At some distance opposite, the outer walls of Sarcophagus College silent, black, and windowless through their 4 centuries of gloom, bigotry, and decay into the little room she occupied, shutting out the moonlight by night and the sun by day. The outlines of Rubric College also were discernible beyond the other, and the tower of a third farther off still. She thought of the strange operation of a simple-minded man's ruling passion, that it should have led Jude, who loved her, and the children so tenderly, to place them here in this depressing purlieu, because he was still haunted by his dream. Even now he did not distinctly hear the freezing negative that those shallowed walls had echoed to his desire. The failure to find another lodging, and the lack of room in this house for his father, had made a deep impression on the boy. A brooding and demonstrative horror seemed to have seized him. The silence was broken by his saying, "Other, what shall we do tomorrow?" "I don't know," said Sue despondently. "I'm afraid this will trouble your father. I wish father was quite well, and there had been room for him. Then it wouldn't matter so much. Poor father." "It wouldn't. Can I do anything?" "No. All is trouble, adversity, and suffering. Father went away to give us children room, didn't he?" "Partly. It would be better to be out of the world than in it, wouldn't it?" "It would almost, dear. 'Tis because of us children too, isn't it, that you can't get a good lodging?" "Well, people do object to children sometimes." "Then if children make so much trouble, why do people have them?" "Oh, because it is a law of nature." "But we don't ask to be born?" No, indeed. And what makes it worse with me is that you are not my real mother, and you needn't have had me unless you liked. I oughtn't to have come to E, that's the real truth. I troubled them in Australia, and I trouble folk here. I wish I hadn't been born. You couldn't help it, my dear. I think that whenever children be born that are not wanted, they should be killed directly, before their souls come to them, and not allowed to grow big and walk about. Sue did not reply. She was doubtfully pondering how to treat this too reflective child. She at last concluded that, so far as circumstances permitted, she would be honest and candid with one who entered into her difficulties like an aged friend. There is going to be another in our family soon, she hesitatingly remarked. How? There is going to be another baby. What? The boy jumped up wildly. H God, mother, you've never a cent for another, and such trouble with what you've got. Yes, I have, I am sorry to say, murmured Sue, her eyes glistening with suspended tears. The boy burst out weeping. H, you don't care, he cried in bitter reproach. However could you, mother, be so wicked and cruel as this, when you needn't have done it till we was better off, and father well, to bring us all into more trouble. No room for us, and father a forced to go away, and we turned out tomorrow, and yet you be going to have another of us soon. ... tis done no purpose. Tis. He walked up and down sobbing. Why, you must forgive me, little Jude, she pleaded, her bosom heaving now as much as the boy's. I can't explain, I will when you are older. It does seem as if I had done it on purpose, now we are in these difficulties. I can't explain, dear. But it is not quite on purpose, I can't help it. Yes, it is, it must be. For nobody would interfere with us, like that, unless you agreed. I won't forgive you, ever, ever. I'll never believe you care for me, or father, or any of us anymore. He got up, and went away into the closet adjoining her room, in which a bed had been spread on the floor. There she heard him say, if we children was gone there'd be no trouble at all. Don't think that, dear, she cried, rather peremptorily. But go to sleep. The following morning she awoke at a little past six, and decided to get up and run across before breakfast to the inn which Jude had informed her to be his quarters, to tell him what had happened before he went out. She arose softly, to avoid disturbing the children, who, as she knew, must be fatigued by their exertions of yesterday. She found Jude at breakfast in the obscure tavern he had chosen as a counterpoise to the expense of her lodging, and she explained to him her homelessness. He had been so anxious about her all night, he said. Somehow, now it was morning, the request to leave the lodgings did not seem such a depressing incident as it had seemed the night before, nor did even her failure to find another place affect her so deeply as at first. Jude agreed with her that it would not be worth while to insist upon her right to stay a week, but to take immediate steps for removal. You must all come to this inn for a day or two, he said. It is a rough place, and it will not be so nice for the children, but we shall have more time to look round. There are plenty of lodgings in the suburbs in my old quarter of Beersheba. Have breakfast with me now you are here, my bird. You are sure you are well? There will be plenty of time to get back and prepare the children's meal before they wake. In fact, I'll go with you. She joined Jude in a hasty meal, and in a quarter of an hour they started together, resolving to clear out from Sue's to respectable lodging immediately. On reaching the place and going, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.